First time, long time, welcome. I'm Smitty. We got Roan, we got Booze. And our apologies, people. Our apologies. We were supposed to record our usual Tuesday night, Wednesday night, you know, no big deal. And then Wednesday night, I received a text message from a very trusted Eagles source who has led us in the right direction many times before that an article by Jeff McClain was impending. And it was essentially a hit piece on one Howie Roseman, and it will be dropping early Thursday morning. So, you know, first time, long time, due diligence. We're going to suspend recording. Wait till that article drops. Of course, to make me look like the asshole, it didn't drop till Friday morning. And when it dropped, I have to tell you, kind of anticlimactic for me personally, just for me. Now, I know there are people out there who don't understand or even believe the inner workings of the Philadelphia Eagles and how things have gone down in previous years from Jeffrey Lurie and on the way down. But I am not surprised by any single thing in this article by Jeff McClain. And on top of that, it makes me feel a little bit apathetic because in the end, and we're going to come full circle to this, we're stuck, people. We're stuck. We're stuck with Jeffrey Lurie. We're stuck with Howie Roseman. And there's really nothing much we can do. But we're going to get into every single incident and point in that article. Roan, what did you think about it overall?
Yeah, it's interesting because as convoluted as the Eagles' dynamics are and as the front office, the players, the coaches, how that entire relationship intertwines, just as complicated is the Philadelphia media and their relationship with the Eagles. So it's almost like with every article like this, you have to consider the source. And if you follow Jeff McClain, his Twitter presence, he's the Inquirer's reporter. He gets like the first question in a lot of press conferences, very respected guy, but he also is almost defensive at sometimes when people say that he doesn't go at the front office hard enough, which makes you think that he's almost overcompensating with the way that he went at the front office in this kind of rambling piece that just went on and on. Like you said, Smitty, it was very anticlimactic, but it was almost like you have to consider him as a player in this as much as all the other players. You have to consider the source and the storyteller.
Exactly. And Ronan and I were having this discussion yesterday about Jeff McClain, how he is a respected journalist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. You need to be kind of in the inside boys club to get any sort of access with the Philadelphia Eagles to begin with. And I brought this point up yesterday when we were talking that Jeff McClain, I'm not sure if he has an axe to grind against Howie and the administration, but if you remember a few months back when there was an article about Howie defending his boy at the time, Carson Wentz, Jeff McClain went on to portray Howie Roseman's office as kind of a shrine to Carson Wentz, in a sense, saying that there was a giant fathead and of Carson Wentz and just made it seem like Howie was praising Wentz above everybody else in a way, which in a sense was true. There was a giant fathead above Howie Roseman's desk in his office, but there was also a giant fathead of Fletcher Cox, another prominent member of the Eagles, as well as a celebratory timeline of the Eagles in itself up there on the wall. So it wasn't just like a Carson Wentz shrine like Jeff McClain made it out to believe, which makes me read his stuff with a little bit of a grain of salt.
Yeah, now, he has like a predisposition towards sensationalism in his writing. And he did the same thing with like a Jason Kelce story earlier in the year, right around the end of the season. And in this story, like, he talks about Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie's relationship. He acts like Howie Roseman's like a son who's eager to please his dad. I think that was one of the lines from it. So his perspective on their relationship is very clear. So it's almost like you have to weed through and find the truth.
However, there were many instances and examples from this article, three in which in particular that were backed up by many sources, most of which were anonymous that don't want to be let it be known who they are, who have moved on from the Eagles. But you have to believe that they're true. We'll get to these instances. But first of all, Howie Roseman overall, this article essentially confirms exactly who we thought he was. He was who we thought he is. And that is a person who is wildly smart, extremely calculated, and very manipulative, especially towards Jeffrey Lurie Roan. I don't have that affable presence in which I can run for political office. But if you, my friend, were to ever run for mayor, governor, or president, Howie Roseman should be your campaign manager, without a doubt.
Well, first off, Smitty, you would have to be an idiot to ever want to be in any type of politics and dealing with all the trappings that come along with that. That would be, sounds like the worst job of all time. But of course, Howie Roseman's conniving. Of course, he's calculating. And that's kind of what I want out of my GM at the end of the day. Like, I don't begrudge him those things because he's trying to fleece other players, agents, other teams. He wants to make trades. Like, if there's one guy in the organization you want to be somewhat conniving, it's the GM, right?
I agree to you, but he does it in all the wrong ways, and he does it solely for self-preservation. Can you fucking pronounce that for me?
Self-preservation. You're just
thank
added
you.
Syllable.
Self-preservation. That's all that he's there for. He is aware that he came in what, 2000 or whatever it was, as an accounting intern, and he has worked his way up. He didn't play a down in the NFL. He didn't play a down in Pee Wee football. He doesn't have any coaching experience, and now he is evaluating players like he has been an expert of the game for his entire life. And he, rightfully so, and I get what he's thinking, he understands that he's kind of an imposter. He understands that Chip Kelly tossed him in a locker. He understands that the world is against him. I don't hate the way that, well, I do hate it, but I at least understand the way how he goes about his job of essentially surviving. He outlasted Joe Banner, who is Jeffrey Lurie's childhood friend. He outlasted Andy Reid. He outlasted Chip Kelly. He outlasted Doug Peterson. He is a master of survival. And the way he goes about it is it's pretty simple. He is the only person Jeffrey Lurie talks to. He's the only person, essentially, when it comes to football operations, he's the only person to talk to. And we'll get into Jeffrey Lurie too, who is trying to become more involved in the organization. As things are coming out, it seems like he has been more involved. He has sit down powwows about coaching decisions with Doug Peterson every Tuesday. But when it comes down to it, it's just Howie feeding Jeff whatever Jeff wants to hear or whatever Howie wants Jeff to hear.
I think that Howie Roseman's Poindexter, pocket protector, taped up glasses demeanor is the only reason he's lasted that long. If John Lynch, if John Elway, if any of these GMs who are former players were in the same situation, they would have come to odds. The personality types would have, they would have butted heads with ownership, with coaches, and they would have been out of here. But Howie Roseman has that nerdy cockroach vibe to him where he is going to survive apocalypse after apocalypse. Everyone will die around him and he will live on. But I mean, self-preservation is the name of the game for pretty much every human.
See, a true football guy GM wouldn't take shit from Jeffrey Lurie because he knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right, Roan. Like, Howie Roseman is not a football guy. He's just a pencil pusher, I guess, and he does what he's told.
So there are three instances of you guys are exactly right. A football guy would not have lasted with Jeffrey Lurie this long. And, you know, to Howie Roseman's credit, he has been conniving and calculated to basically a fault, where he has taken down the entire franchise just so he can earn another paycheck for the rest of his 2-year contract. The way he has done this to Jeffrey Lurie and the fact that he has, when he talks to anybody in the coaching staff, the scouts, he separates them. He goes 1v1, which is an extremely manipulative move because you can use anything in those conversations against anybody you want. He's not he's not going into group settings and getting opinions from everybody. If Howie Roseman's talking to a member of the coaching staff, he's doing it individually. And then he'll talk to another member of the coaching staff or the scouting staff or another member of the front office individually. And who knows what the fuck those conversations are or how he's taking those conversations to Jeffrey Lurie or to other people. Nobody knows what exactly to believe. And it's brilliant. It's a brilliant move by Howie Roseman to go about his business that way.
Biddy, but is that really that big of a deal? When I'm looking at this, I have to step back and I'm like, is that just Jeff McClain making a big deal out of something? I don't think one-on-one meetings are like this damning character flaw. I think that it's a way of doing things, and it might be right and it might be wrong, but I think that it's much more Jeff McClain's slant on this that's turning him into this absolute snake because he's not having group meetings. Like, maybe he just processes stuff better that way. I don't necessarily begrudge him that. Like, I was trying to, like, see the truth in that. Like, is it that bad to meet with people one-on-one?
I think it's that bad when he is using it for his own cause and justice, which I think is the reason why. And the example you have, the precedent, is when there was a member of the coaching staff who evaluated two of Howie Roseman's previous draft picks, not in a favorable light in front of everybody. And Howie Roseman takes him aside and says, dude, what are you doing? You're making me look bad in front of my scouts. What the fuck does that mean? It's just a coaching staff member doing his job, evaluating players. And Howie is going to be that totalitarian presence saying that, hey, if you don't give my players that I drafted favorable reviews in front of everybody, I'm going to declare prima nocta on your ass, and I am going to fucking rid you from this organization. Because that's the feeling, that's the culture that's being evolved right now, and that essentially has been since the Super Bowl.
I found it weird in this article, or let me back it up. I just see how we got here. It makes sense to me how we got here. We built a Super Bowl team, and we felt like we had a window. We were in a window and we tried to hold on to that window, and we overextended ourselves to do that. Fucked ourselves over by trying to hold on to these older guys. That was a mistake, but that's just him trying to hold on to this precious short Super Bowl window that we had. But at the end of the day, the quarterback wasn't right. And that window's not going to be a long time. That's not going to be for a long time if the quarterback's not
right. Roan. Okay. So I mentioned number one of the three examples that I have a major issue with in this article. Number one was the coaching staff member who talked bad about Howie's draft picks and Howie taking an issue with that for whatever fucking reason for him doing his job. Number two was there were sources quoted that people could not say anything bad about Carson Wentz, even when he was doing bad and before he was doing bad. You couldn't say anything critical about him because word would get back to the top and that would be detrimental to you in your long run.
I mean, but there was a story in that article where in the 2019 offseason, Jim Schwartz went to a soiree on the main line at fucking was it Lurie's house or Howie's house? I think it was Lurie's house.
Yeah.
But one of their mansions out in Gladwin or whatever the fuck. But Jim Schwartz was critical of Carson Wentz at that time in 2019, and that was right before they signed him to the extension. But if Jim Schwartz, I feel like Jim Schwartz is a big key in all of this. If he knew in 2019 that Carson Wentz wasn't the guy, then it's like, well, what the fuck are we supposed to do if the quarterback we have isn't the guy? And then we sign him to a long-term extension, which shows some kind of ineptitude. But the fact that Jim Schwartz was able to just walk away from this situation, we haven't heard a peep about him. It was almost like he was pretty happy to just drive off into the sunset in a fucking red Corvette and fucking go into what quasi-retirement or whatever. I think that's very telling about how badly he wanted to get out of this situation, which is clearly a toxic situation. But a lot of it falls on the fact that we thought we had the right quarterback. We drafted at number two overall, and we didn't. And now we're at a point where we have to retool to try and find that guy.
With Jim Schwartz, first of all, I do agree with you that I think he is happy he's out of here. He did think that it was the situation filled with toxicity. I don't read much into that Christmas party, wherever it was, where, you know, Jim Schwartz probably offhanded drunk and said, you know, Carson had a bad spring. First of all, it's not Jim Schwartz's responsibility to evaluate the quarterback. he probably just said that because he noticed, you know, tendencies, and maybe he had a lingering thought in his mind that, you know, Carson Wentz might not be the guy. But at that stage, they already made up their decision. They're going to fucking just say, oh, yeah, you know what? You're right, Jim. Let's rip up this contract we had in the works for probably 6 months and not give Carson Wentz his money. That decision was already made at that point. The more of the issue is if members of the coaching staff were frightened to give their doubts to Carson Wentz, then how is Howie Roseman going to make the right decision and not give Carson Wentz that money? I'm saying the culture of fear that has been produced from Jeffrey Lurie to Howie Roseman and then below them by setting up these new coaching staffs who are just happy to be there and bringing on people that might not be willing to step up. Doug Peterson, football guy, but just non-staple NFL guys who have quote unquote earned the right to speak out. If they are fearful of saying that Carson Wentz may not be the guy, what's stopping Howie Roseman from making that decision, which he did, which is the wrong one? Does that make sense?
Everybody
is Rone frozen, or is he fucking looking in my soul from saying that?
I think Rone is frozen.
Okay, good. Rone's not,
I couldn't tell either. I could not tell either.
Yo.
Yeah, we thought you were staring.
I thought you were staring into my soul.
I thought, yeah, you fine. Guys. I had a lag going. I had Smitty on a lag. I was asking you guys if there was a lag. I guess I was just frozen as shit.
No,
am I better now?
Yeah, you're better. Basically, what I was saying is if the coaching staff was scared of saying anything negative about Carson Wentz because it's Howie's golden boy and Howie is Lurie's golden boy, if that – you're frozen. He's frozen again. That's it. That's all sure.
Is he?
He's got to be.
I can't tell. Yeah. So, wait. My question is, so you're saying that if the writing was on the wall that Carson Wentz could potentially not be the guy all the way back in 2019 before they signed him to this big contract, then, and had they not signed him to this contract, then you think the shitstorm would have been the same no matter what, basically, right? Had they signed him or had they had not signed him?
I'm saying that if people are fearful of speaking their opinions objectively about the franchise quarterback and Howie Roseman did not have all the facts in front of him because of that, because Jeffrey Lurie's looking at the franchise through Roseman colored glasses and Howie Roseman is enacting this culture of fear that you can't say anything bad about the draft picks or about the talent evaluation that Carson has brought in, then of course Howie's going to make this decision of signing him to a franchise-altering contract. That's what I'm saying. It all starts at the top, and if people are scared to speak up, then you got a fucking dictatorship and anarchy.
So now, if Jeffrey Lurie is really the master, the puppeteer behind all of this, do you think in some way, and obviously Howie Roseman is just the puppet, do you think Howie Roseman is afraid to share his own thoughts? If it's all Jeffrey Lurie, you know what I mean? Does that make sense? Like,
okay, but Howie Roseman is the puppet and the puppeteer all at once. Howie is pulling his own strings. Jeffrey Lurie is just wants yes men. He wants to make it known that he's doing the right thing, even though he has no idea what the right thing is. And Howie doesn't even know what the right thing is. He's just going to tell Jeff what the right thing is and what the wrong
tell him what
is.
He wants to hear.
Exactly. And that's why we're stuck. Keyword, stuck. And it sucks. And it sucks.
So what was the third and final story you wanted to bring?
The third and final point, which is the most egregious of them all, is Howie's interactions with the players and how he disrespects talent and seemingly people under him. And that was brought to a head with the Lane Johnson story of when he was hurt before a Jacksonville game in London, was questioning whether or not he could play, and then Howie Roseman quote-unquote berated him. And it's just it's one thing if you want to be chummy with the guys in the locker room, which I guess is human nature, but you can't do that as a general manager of a ball club. Because yeah, you could be chummy, get along with everybody one day, you know, play a little grab ass, shoot the shit, but the next day, that person could have a devastating injury, and all of a sudden you're cutting them and to save $10 million of dead cap space. Like, you can't get that. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't have it both ways. Yeah. I just don't understand that.
Especially when you are not even close to being on the level of caliber as these guys are. You're not a football guy, dude. You're a numbers guy. You're a general manager. You're not physically a part of the team. So you can't act like you're a teammate of Lane Johnson. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. But the biggest, most egregious thing was when Howie Roseman berated Lane Johnson. Lane Johnson went back to the locker room, said, "I'm not playing for this fucking guy." It had to be talked by Chris Long and others to get back out there. Jason Peters went to Doug Peters' office to get Lane Johnson back out there. Howie Roseman then saying, "Oh, you have your mouthpiece in now. You can't say anything stupid," whether or not it was in jest or not, infuriates me. Because you're exactly right. Howie Roseman, he's not John Lynch. He's not John Elway. He's not even fucking Ray Farmer. He's not a GM that has been in the trenches, that knows what it's like to play the game. Lane Johnson is one of the toughest motherfuckers who has ever worn midnight green for the Eagles, or Kelly green, or any sort of green. He fucking played last year with his ankle hanging by a thread, a literal thread. He was playing in 2019 when that game was stated, with his ankle surgically repaired, but just shattered. Yep. And for him to go out there and question whether or not he should be playing, which, you know, he knows his own body. He's right. He got injured 7 plays into the game and fucking tore a ligament in his knee as well. You fucking listen to him. You don't go into the locker room and berate a player, any player, let alone someone of that caliber, and say you need to be fucking out there playing. Who the fuck do you think you are, Howie Roseman? You're a fucking glorified accountant who came in as an intern in 2000. You shut the fuck up and let these players play. And if they can't play, you respect the fact that they go out there every single Sunday to fucking go to war to write your fucking paychecks. So you shut the fuck up if you ever, ever question somebody's heart or body ever again. That goes from the NFL all the way down to the D3, the high school, the peewee football levels. You sack of fucking worthless accounting shit, Howie Roseman.
If you don't know what it's like to be on that line, if you don't know what it's like to have to beat your body up whistle after whistle, if you've never been through that before in your entire life, you have no right to go in there and say, you need to play this fucking game today, or don't play this fucking game. You have no right to even step foot in that locker room unless it's about contract issues, unless it's about, you know, PR stuff with the Eagles organization. You have no right to step in and tell Lane Johnson he can or can't play. That's unbelievable when I heard that. Unbelievable.
That is the most infuriating thing in this article. Everything else is just like, okay, yeah, I can see it. You know, he's manipulative. He's a snake. Like, he's Lori's right-hand man. He's the puppet and the puppeteer. Okay, I can see that. When that story came out, that's infuriating. Yeah. That's infuriating that he can talk to players like that and get away with it. I'm surprised he wasn't fucking bundled up in the locker room, to be honest with you.
Yeah. you're absolutely right. Like, as soon as I heard that, I thought for sure, like, the fact that he didn't get punched in the mouth or leave the locker room with a black eye is kind of surprising. You know, like, all power to everybody for not jumping on that. You know what I mean?
So what it comes down to, and we'll get Roan's thoughts when he gets back in a second, he's restarting his stuff. We're just stuck. We're just stuck. As long as this relationship between Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman keeps on manifesting and growing some way, somehow, even though they keep on getting worse, as a football team and a franchise, like it's not going to change. And the question, sadly, is how should fans be reacting? And right now, it's very, I'm distraught just saying it, but I'm apathetic. I'm apathetic towards this football team because there's no way I can be excited.
Well, towards the players.
No, towards this football team, towards the franchise.
Whole organization. You're apathetic towards Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie.
Because I can't change anything. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to get all hot and bothered? I realize that this team is not going to be a winning product this year, probably next year. Howie Roseman has 2 years left on his contract. I realize that the sixth pick overall is probably going to be a fucking bust no matter what they do. I realize that, yeah, they have a third round pick from Indianapolis this year, probably second round next year, as long as the people who are still making the decisions are going to be selecting those picks. I'm very apathetic.
I think it's wrong to feel apathetic because the reason why you feel apathetic is their own fault in the first place. It's through Jeffrey Lurie's big rich guy, small dick ego that the Eagles are in the position they are in. It's because of Howie Roseman's horrible personable skills and terrible decision-making that the Eagles are in the spot that they are in. Horrible drafting. It's all because of them. So you can't feel bad for them being in the position that they're in because they got themselves there.
I'm not feeling bad. I'm feeling apathetic. It's apathy, booze. Look it up in the dictionary. I don't fucking care. I can't care. I have a perfect level of not caring going on. It's balanced because I can't get angry. I can't get heated because what's it going to do? What's it going to change? I can't be encouraging because then I'm just fucking trying to ride the right dick of the devil. Like there's nothing you can do. I just have to ride it out until there's something that can give me a little bit of hope, just some hope. And maybe it will be Howie and Jeff in some way or fashion in the next year or two, like it was in 2016, 2017. But until I'm given that proof, I'm apathetic. Which, I mean, doesn't mean shit because I'm still going to go to the games, watch the team on TV, like follow, report.
But that's just because I want to see Jalen Hurts do well. That's just because I want to see Brandon Brooks get back and absolutely do work on the line after missing again last year. That's because I want to see the players play well aside from all of the bullshit that's happening in the front office. Like that to me is going to be what's going to help me hang on to a little bit of hope here is to see, I don't know, we don't know anything, but to see Coach Sirianni go out his very first year and, perform at a decent level, seeing Jalen Hurts grow as a quarterback, seeing Miles Sanders actually get more than 8 carries an entire ball game. You know what I mean? It's little things like that. I think that will keep me in time or in tuned in, but just completely ignoring the fact that our front office is in shambles.
I will always root for the players. I always root for Lane Johnson, who for some reason is still putting up with the shit. I'm still rooting for Jason Kelce, who for some reason is coming back.
On a restructured deal. Less money.
I'm not sure why they are restructuring all over the place. I know Howie's a cap wizard, even though we're in cap catastrophe. But It's a pure rebuilding process from the start. And if they can get any value for any of these guys, we've said it before, and we're saying it right now, they have to get it. I don't get flabbergasted much anymore in this life, but I was flabbergasted when I read that.
But Smitty, do you have any respect for how Howie can build a Super Bowl team? Do you give him any credit for building the 2017 team? I mean, look at the guys who caught touchdown passes in that game. A guy that he brought in, and now Sean Jeffrey. He brought in everybody, but like Corey Clement, that's a find. Like some of these guys are major finds that he had. I have confidence in his ability to build a team more so than in his ability to maintain a team.
You know, that team you got to give some credit to Chip Kelly as well. Yeah, I give credit to Joe Douglas. I'm not saying Howie doesn't deserve credit. Of course he does. He's the GM. He was also the GM of the Dream Team. Why doesn't he get credit for ruining that franchise when it was? He's also the credit for drafting Carson Wentz and then giving him a contract and then drafting a second rounder in Jalen Hurts. Like, you got to spread the credit along across all fronts. And I was talking with someone the other week who said that he would take 10 legitimate bad years of football for one Super Bowl. And if he could do it over again, he would do the exact same thing.
In Philly, though, that's just kind of how it goes, though. We had never won a Super Bowl before. That's like the one thing every Philadelphia fan in the world really wants. We got it, and now I think that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, and I would do that too. But is it so much to ask for just a level of consistency and
or a little bit of competence?
And competition over a long period of time. I mean, their record under Howie as GM is above 500. They made the playoffs seven out of the 11 years he's been GM. I fact check that, but it's something like that. Like, they've had some success, but it's how it's not that they've had success. It's how they've had success. And it's not that they're in this position now of failure. It's how they're in the position of failure.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating. It's very frustrating. It's even more frustrating. We just lost Ron again. Get to the voicemails.
Hey, what's happening? This is Kevin Pergesi. First time, long time. Just want to say, man, love the show. And Eagles aren't going to be good for 5 years. People think the Eagles are going to be good within 5 years with the mess that we have going on with the cap and no quarterback situation is ridiculous. I mean, I think Justin Fields is a great athlete, but if we draft him, I'll be furious, man. I don't know what the answer is, but we have way too many positions to fill to draft Justin Fields. That's all I got to say. Keep up the good work.
Appreciate that. You said 5 years. When were the Browns 0-16? Like 4 years ago? They made the playoffs 3 years ago? When were the Lions 0-16? And then Jim Schwartz came in. I think within 2 or 3 years, they were a playoff team. So you can turn it around fairly quickly in the NFL. But if this administration that, again, who has burned the fucking house to the ground is allowed to rebuild it, like, it might be longer than 5 years if they're still around.
I'm happy that they're at least rebuilding with Jalen Hurts, though. It at least feels like there's an intentional step forward where at least we feel like we've taken a couple steps on the journey rather than, like, the journey's about to start when we draft a quarterback. Like, it seems like they're locked in on Hurts, then they're not going to draft a quarterback.
They're locked in on Hurts is because they bought the property to rebuild on, like, so overvalued that they can't fucking sell it or do anything else with it.
Plus, not only that, I have no, like, confidence that they'll actually build around Hurts because they were supposed to build around Carson Wentz when they gave him his ginormous record-breaking contract, and see where that got us.
The fact that they're building around Hurts is nothing more than they have no other choice right now.
Right.
Which is fine. I mean, I'd rather them give him a shot and see what you got, but it's not some grand scheme of a fucking brilliant plan.
Are you rooting for Carson Wentz to be successful with the Colts?
Well, we have to. If we want a first round draft pick, we kind of have to.
I wouldn't say I'm rooting for it, but I wouldn't, like, be angry at the guy if he was successful. And I do think he's going to be successful. I do. I genuinely do.
I'm rooting for him to fail.
I know you are.
Yo, my name's Evan. I'm from Delco. I'm not worried about the Sixers. I think everyone wants to make a move. Dude, who's stopping Joel Embiid? I don't see anybody. The Nets got what, Blake Griffin? He's washed. He's a big name, and everyone thinks that that's the move to make. But, I mean, come on. Have you seen Joel Embiid play? It's up to him. If he can stay healthy and he can get done the fourth quarter, I don't see why we can't win a championship.
Hey, look, I agree with you, but they're going to need to make a move, and if it is insignificant in the eyes of most, they're going to need to bring on like a George Hill or an Evan Fournier. They're not going to get LaVine anymore. They just said that Kyle Lowry no longer on the table in Toronto. Oladipo's still maybe out there, but I highly doubt they're going to make that move. They need to do something to fix up the bench a little bit. I don't think they're going to be able to get anybody to replace Green or Curry in the starting lineup, but they got to do something that's minimal. But I agree, Embiid's a beast. He's an MVP. Nobody's going to be able to stop him.
How about the blue coats almost winning the G League? Maybe we bump somebody up. Maybe those are the things that we need. Maybe we need Isaiah Joe coming up and jacking 9 threes for us, or Paul Reed being our like interior 6'9", like power forward backup center type of option. And honestly, I like Tony Bradley the other night. Like we got some guys. I don't know. Like I don't. Maybe it'd be okay to add somebody, but I wouldn't like be killing myself if they didn't. The Nets are adding too many people.
Yeah, they are. But they're still going to win. They're still going to be there. The Bucks are starting to scare me. Not more than the Nets right now, but it's a good thing the Sixers won last night against the Bulls without Embiid and Simmons, because they're going to need to win every single game they can and should on the way out. I mean, they're a half a game ahead of the Nets right now. You need that number one seed solely so the Nets and Bucks play each other in the second round. If we have to play, you know, the eighth seed in the first round and then the Celtics in the second round, good. We'll fucking dick wipe them right off the hemisphere. But if we have to go through, if we get that 2-3 seed and we have to go through the Nets or the Bucks in the second round just to get to the Eastern Conference Finals and play the other one, that scares me. That really scares me.
I mean, we didn't do it on the scale that the Nets are doing it this year, but the Nets roster composition this year reminds me of the Sixers last year, where we were just like, let's get as many good players as possible and they'll sort it out. Where basketball, like, you kind of have to have some chemistry on your team. I trust our chemistry more than the Nets team, but I agree. I want to be that number one overall seed for sure.
And Blake Griffin doesn't scare me. Great guy. He's got nothing close to what he had left in the tank 5-6 years ago. Like, he's okay, but that's not going to put the Nets over the top. Not at all.
I'm not sure why, but I couldn't hear those last two voicemails, so I was basically just going off of Smitty's reaction and answering phantom questions. But I'll try it again this time, or I don't know if there's a reason why I couldn't hear it.
You basically just missed two Delco calls, one bashing the Eagles, another bashing people who bash the Sixers.
Let's see who we bash next.
What's up, boys? How you doing? I just saw the new Sixers uniforms that came out today. Needless to say, they're friggin' horrible. God only knows who picked out them uniforms. Who designs a uniform with a gigantic Liberty bell on it, which is pretty cool, and then ruins it by putting a god-awful mother that's bigger than the friggin' Liberty bell sign? Horrible. God-awful. They should get rid of them. They should burn them. All we want is the 2006ers jerseys. Give us the black jerseys. That's all we want. That's all we're asking for. All right. Talk to you later.
And now we're bashing the newly dropped Sixers jerseys with the Liberty Bell and the the numerical sign that's too big. I don't hate it. I mean, the Sixers could play in basically just 1950s. White or red full color jerseys with numbers on the back. I'm talking full Hickory Hoosiers style. I wouldn't give a fuck. I didn't like the Boathouse Road jerseys. I these are okay, whatever. I'm even kind of like not the biggest fan of the Iverson black jerseys.
They would have been better than this. Like, at least give us some like old nostalgia. Like, they just refuse to go back to those old jerseys. And I think they would be very popular if they were to bring them back in 2021.
I guess I agree. I don't care. Give me like an old school Wilt Chamberlain jersey, just with the number. I don't care. They're going to win regardless.
I think that the Sixers should be, if the Eagles don't want to use Kelly Green, the Sixers should use Kelly Green. Yes. They should soak up Kelly Green, throw some Kelly Green jerseys on this. I mean, the jerseys, like, I don't even have an opinion on a lot of jerseys that are coming across. It's like, okay, they're fine. Like, I'm not disgusted by them. I'm not in love with them. There's some franchises that like embarrass themselves with the jerseys they put out. We haven't embarrassed ourselves. Like none of the jerseys are like atrocious, but it's a small thing to distract yourself with, but why not Kelly Green? Why not fucking get some Flyers orange on the Phillies or some shit, or bring back the powder blue Phillies for the Eagles? I don't know.
I do agree with what you said a couple weeks ago, Ron. The snake's got to go. The snake was a process thing like 2-3 years ago. I've noticed it more and more on the court, like since you said it, like it's got to go. Snake's over. See ya.
Yeah. I have a Embiid MVP shirt that they just like designed that we might be selling soon that has the snake on it. But yeah, the snake's got to go.
No, the snake. Snake always plays. Snake always plays.
I love the snake personally.
It just reminds me of like the process. Like we're past the process. We're looking to complete the process. That snake needs to be won at this point.
I saw too many snake flags storming the Capitol. I was like, what the fuck?
That's also true. Sixers fans? That's also true.
Hey, fellas, I'm Connor. I'm a student at Penn State, and I wanted to ask about Carter Hart. He's obviously been struggling a bit this year. I saw the video of him earlier putting in extra work at practice today. So I was wondering if it's too early to start worrying about him in net. And related to that, across all Philly sports, are we as fans hyping these young stars up too much to the point where the minute they experience like any type of setback, it causes this mass hysteria, both in the fan bases and in the organizations for that matter. So curious to hear your thoughts. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Booze, you're not going to like it, but the last two Capitals games, last night and two games ago, not hot. The Buffalo Sabres game, the worst team in the NHL, who the Flyers needed to win that game, come away with points. 3 goals and 8 shots. Elliott comes in, saves the day. Like, what the fuck, Booze? What the fuck?
Listen, this kid is 22 fucking years old. He's a child. He was just legally able to have an alcoholic beverage last year, and he is one of the faces of an NHL franchise hockey team in one of the toughest cities to play in the entire world, I would say. You got to give this kid a break, man. The things he's already done in his short 2 years with the team has been nothing short of electric. Goalies have cold streaks all the time. It just fucking happens. It's a mental game. It's part of the sport. The kid's 22 years old. We can't start comparing this kid to Carson Wentz now. This is unbelievable that Philly sports media is starting to do this shit. It's unbelievable.
I agree with you, but when this team is built to win now, if he's this cold going into the playoffs, do you not start
I'm
Elliott?
Telling you right now, this team is not built to win right now. Win right now because of the horrendous defense we have out on that ice. He's not getting any help.
No, he's not.
He's not getting any help from anybody. There's no physicality. There's no the turnovers are just unbelievable. And it's year after year. I sound like a broken record at this point. But, like, I guess the only difference is Brian Elliott has been handling that because he's been seeing that same shitty defense all year as well. He's just been handling it a little bit better. But he's also has – years and years and years of NHL experience under his belt, whereas Carter Hart is still raw. He's still young. You got to give him time. Cold streaks happen. He'll get hot again. I have the utmost confidence he'll get hot again.
The teams that are above the Flyers right now, obviously the Capitals are taking care of business against us, but like seems like the Islanders, the Bruins maybe – who else?
Maybe we can't beat the Bruins worth fucking shit.
Yeah, the Bruins have our number.
Oh,
depends. Like it seems like that. I mean, as good like the Flyers are just in kind of that like second tier in the East.
And this is the thing: the Flyers could be in that first tier. They have the scoring. They have the offense. Like they have the goaltending. Their defense is the only crutch that is going to cost them possibly a playoff spot. They need to figure out their defense because it is horrendous.
Yeah, and people don't realize they might not make the playoffs.
They might not make the playoffs. If they don't figure that shit out, they might not make the playoffs.
Yeah. Wild.
Barone, bird fucking gang, dude. Listen, I don't know what the fucking question was, and honestly, I'm probably late as shit to the party, but listen, Joel MVP – and Jalen is the future. Listen, we all fucking gave in to Wentz thinking this Mormon white savior was going to save the city of Philadelphia. Fuck that. When has that ever happened? We're a city with fucking killers, man. We had Vic, a fucking dude who was eating dogs for lunch. We had McNabb, who was fucking eating Campbell's soup all damn day and didn't even speak a word. Listen, Jalen is mobile. He actually has, honestly, a more decorated career than Wentz does, even in college, with the NFL, with everything. Listen, Carson was a virgin his whole damn life, dude. His whole damn life. He finally got some pussy, and I've never met one person that lost their virginity and became a bigger fucking dork, dude. He doesn't want to win. He got paid. He gave up. He's in Indy. Now he can go fuck his wife out there. Or maybe he's a pussy hound at this point. Maybe his mind is elsewhere. Maybe if I grew some bigger titties, he would try to fuck me too, just like he fucked Philadelphia, just like he fucked his whole organization up. Now listen, Ferone, I appreciate the message. If you hit us up, you can hit me up at TWPENT. That's called Fuck With Philly. I actually met you at the Mummers Day Parade last time when there wasn't any COVID or anything like that, and you couldn't answer my question of which Sixers head coach had the fattest ass, which was Mo Cheek. You said you'd follow me, but you didn't, so fuck you. Anybody that's listening, follow Fuck With Philly or PWPENT. Appreciate y'all.
Very rational. A couple of points just for clarification. Carson Wentz was not Mormon. That was Andy Reid. And I do think in the end, Carson Wentz has probably taken more actual lives through hunting than Michael Vick and any other quarterback in Eagles history combined. But go ahead.
Yeah, a lot of rambling points. I can understand why I didn't follow that guy. But I do think that Jalen Hurts is a winner. I will say that, like, through his college career and through his mindset and the way that he kind of – I've heard him say one phrase, like, 20 times where he's like, I try to stay away from the rat poison. And he's talking about the feedback of the people online. And it seems like he's just very dead set on controlling what he's going to control. And if he doesn't succeed, it's going to be because his physical limitations, not his mental limitations. And that's something that I think got in the way at the end of the day for Carson Wentz. He started feeling some sort of way about there being backups or Nick Foles winning a Super Bowl. And I think that Jalen Hurts, maybe he's not going to wind up being like this incredibly physical quarterback, or like maybe he doesn't have all the tools to be there. But I like what I see as far as him reaching out to younger players, the positivity that he has, the fact that he's not going to be distracted by these storylines, that he just gives a fuck about getting in that weight room, repping some fucking 600-pound squats, just being a big, strong guy and controlling what he can control. So I'm excited about those parts of Jalen Hurts for sure.
The one thing about the Eagles this season coming up is obviously they're not going to win, but Jalen Hurts, win or lose, will be exciting to watch. It will be. Got to look forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL changes fast. You know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily think that Jalen Hurts is Russell Wilson early on in his career, because Russell Wilson had a ton of success. Physically, they look a little bit similar. But across the league, teams are like, the Chiefs just cut their two tackles. You know what I mean? Like everything's going to be in flux, and the tides, they come in fast and they go out fast in the NFL, and teams are going to get better fast and they're going to get worse fast. So hopefully we can be on that getting better fast trajectory. But I mean, this all goes back to the, do we trust whoever's shopping for the groceries? And we don't, but maybe they'll get lucky and we'll get a nice fucking gumbo of a bunch of Jalens. You know, maybe we'll draft another Jalen Waddle or some bullshit.
I don't trust who's shopping for the groceries. I don't trust who's cooking the groceries because they never cooked before. But the groceries themselves, you know, Jalen Hurts, he ain't filet mignon, but he could be a good skirt steak.
Listen, I love myself a skirt steak. You can make a good food out of a skirt steak.
That's right. Ask Jordy. Jordy will cook up a skirt steak.
We do need some more meat sweats in our lives.
Big time. Always.
I agree to that. All right, boys. We got anything else today?
Not a whole lot. Sorry for checking in and out. But that was just my act of symbolism to show how spotty the Eagles offseason has been the entire time. It's been shaky for sure. Didn't get a lot of information in the McLean article, unfortunately. But the draft is less than 50 days away, gentlemen. So You know, we got 10 picks, two compensatory picks. We'll probably trade. We might. What do you think about trading Dillard? I've heard some chatter.
Get rid of anybody that you can get any sort of value for right now.
What do you guys think of Kyle Pitts?
It's outsmarting yourself. It just is.
Yeah, I've gone on waves with Kyle Pitts. I've fallen in love with him, and I'm kind of in not a falling out of love with him wave, but like the point of having a tight end is like inside outside versatility, and it's like this guy is 240 pounds. He's not really being that blocking like stud that you're looking for. So unless he's the second coming of Calvin Johnson, which I don't think he is, because like he was part of a really good offense in college, but like. I would just rather have the receiver. Like the receiver, it's like that's not being too cute. You just have to have like somebody on the outside or in the slot that is going to get a ton of receptions. I like our tight ends as they are. I'd rather have the receiver, but I wouldn't rule out offensive line either, boys.
If an offensive lineman is there that can be your tackle for the next 20 years, you take him. But Kyle Pitts, I like him as a player a lot. Obviously, they're comparing him to the more athletic Travis Kelce, but there are just far too many other needs
that you just gotta
take care of. Trade down, get two tackles instead of Kyle Pitts right now, and that's if Pitts is going to be there, which I don't think he is, to be honest with
you. And what about Brandon Brooks potentially getting traded? I've heard his name being floated on the trading block. Would you get that's rid of fine. Brandon Brooks?
You gotta anybody who can help another team win right now, you got to get value for, because the Eagles ain't winning anything for the next 2 years minimum.
I think you roll with Brandon Brooks for at least one more year.
I think that Brandon – I mean, didn't we just sign Brandon Brooks to like a long extension? Like,
yeah.
I feel like Brandon Brooks coming back from that injury is going to be very inspired. He had a fucking six-pack coming into this season. I think that Brandon Brooks is a lot of the reason why Carson Wentz was so successful. He is elite as a guard. He is that upper echelon as a guard. And if Jalen Hurts has like one season with the benefit of playing with like a healthy offensive line, like a budding offensive line, I don't know. I would love to have Brandon Brooks around.
I don't hate you, but if you can get something of substantial value for him, a second round, a first round, like multiple thirds, you got to do it. You got to do it, because teams might be that desperate.
Multiple thirds? I don't think anybody's giving up multiple thirds.
Nobody is giving up multiple thirds for him, but if you can get something for him, get something for him. Why not? Philly's still spring training, looking half decent. And other than that, let's go Sixers. Let's go Flyers, please.
Yes, Sixers, take us to the promised land. Lead us into the playoffs. You know, let's ride this back half. And
I'm
let's
telling
take care
you right now, the Flyers will figure it the fuck out. I have confidence.
Any trades? Who's that dude I saw that they're maybe going to be trading for? Fucking Goligoski or something?
Yeah, I'd love it. Anything, literally anything, fucking anything to get our defense out of the shitter. I don't care. Toss the house at them. We need better defense, because this is a win now team, and we won't win dick with the defense we have out there.
Smitty, I don't know if this is maybe this is something to take out of the podcast, but maybe it's something to leave in to keep people excited. But once the world gets a little bit back towards normal, I think that maybe you and I together, or maybe one at a time, depending on who's where. But we should go down to the stadium with just with a microphone and kind of gauge people's feelings as they're going into the games, as they're coming out of the games. Let's just get some boots on the ground out there and just kind of see what the vibe is going to an Eagles game, going into a Sixers game, you know, from time to time. I don't think it has to be anything crazy regular, but like, why not just have, you know, why not just find out about what everybody's saying? It's easy content. People love to see it. And you and I would both do great at it.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's how Barstool Philly got started, with me and Mo going down, just shooting the shit with Casey McDonald way back in 2012, 2013. And I'm always down. We're going down to the stadiums. Philly Live opens up, so we can watch the Eagles get shut out at home and then go lose a couple grand playing a little blackjack. They will run into Michael Rubin. He can stake us.
Hell yeah. But yeah, let's keep that in there just so people can hold us nice and accountable to try and, you know, build some video content for the boys. I think that it could be big.
Love it. Love it. Especially Phillies games. Please get us out there in the sunshine.
The pandemic crew.
Ooh, I don't hate that. I don't hate that big time. Thank you guys very much. Please leave a review. Let us know if you like anything else. We're still an unsanctioned podcast. If you want us to do more of this during the week, keep supporting. Keep supporting. We'll keep cooking. Booze, Roan, thank you. We'll hang up and listen.